Our lesson will read Psalms 34, 11 through 14. Come, your children, listen to me. I will teach you to fear the Lord. Who is the man who desires life and loves many days, and that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it.
Like to open your Bibles to John chapter 14. We'll be there in just a moment. Our class downstairs, we looked at the resurrection of Jesus Christ and the first day of the week. That is what brings us together. That is the foundation of who we are, what we believe, what we do every single day. And so God puts this in our mind, and He died so that he could be raised. And so all that we have thought about, let's continue as we look at his word this morning. Wednesday night, I offered this for our guests. We're not doing a math class. Offered this as a little preview to the lesson tonight. 18 times 365 equals 6,570. And if you didn't figure it out, maybe that gives you a little more of an idea what we're going to be looking at this morning. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, as a part of that, he made limitations. He created boundaries. The seas provide a boundary for the fish, and they don't cross over unless they're pulled out. And if they cross the boundary, then they die. And times and days and seasons, they do that as well. They limit what we can do. They limit how long the ice sculptures are going to last. Times and days and seasons, God put these limitations as a part of this world and this earth. And when he created days and weeks and months and years, he put limitations also on our lives and the opportunities and the privileges that we have and how long those will last. And so when God set the sun and set the earth and evening and morning and the days, the way that our culture defines childhood and parenthood. Parents, you have 6,570 days, 18 years, again, by our culture's definition of that, until the time that our laws declare that your children are adults. And at that point, of course, it doesn't mean your work is over. But there is a shift in the mindset of the child. Well, I'm an adult now. And so the relationship, of course, doesn't end. But there's a change from that point forward. Anytime I do a lesson like this or on marriage, I want to remind you, not everybody will be parents. Or maybe someday, or maybe you feel like you're past that phase for whatever reason. But what this applies to everyone, because everyone has influence on children. And you can influence children at any age and phase of their life, but children in the first 6,570 days of their life, the impression that you make when you involve yourself in them, that lasts. I know it does, having lived in a few different places during the few years of my children's lives. People who involve themselves in my children's lives, it makes an impression, and one that in varying degrees will last beyond this particular phase. And so even if children are not yours, when children are in this phase of their life, you have an opportunity to make a unique impression upon them. So that applies to every aspect of your relationship with them. But the point is, with limited time, and as we all have competing opportunities and responsibilities, I want to look at two things with you this morning that you must accomplish in order to train up a child in the first 6,570 days of their life. The first 6,570 days, you have this unique opportunity to show them that you love God the most. when we think about some of the most basic first principles of the first principles, when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? His answer is, love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. So let's think about the Jews just very briefly. When you look at the lives of whether it be David or Saul or Nadab, Abihu, Daniel, Joseph, when you think of these people, did they know, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, even though Joseph lived before the time that it was stated that way? Nadab and Abihu, what is it that comes to mind when you hear these people's name? And what you know about them, does it tell you, well, here was someone who loved God more than anyone else? And then think about, well, what's that impression based upon? And, of course, we have very limited information about these people, but just based on what we know, that gives us the idea that, well, it seems pretty clear that either they did or they didn't. In John 14 and verse 31, when we think about the life of Jesus, this is one of the most emphasized aspects of Jesus in his teaching and his actions, the love of Christ. There's a variety of songs on that subject. There's only one occasion that I could find where Jesus expressed his love for the Father in words. In verse 31, he says, but that the world may know that I love the Father, and as the Father gave me commandment, so I do. So this is the only time I can find those words where Jesus says, I love the Father. So how do we know that he really loved the Father if we're only told one time that he said it? Well, our words, there's other things that have to accompany our words, aren't there? And Jesus says, I love my Father, and so I keep his commandments. So as we think about our children then, as they look at us, how do they know whether I do or do not love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength the most, more than anyone else? Well, just look at that from a fairly common sense approach. How do your children know anything about who or what you love to any degree? How do your children know that you love them? Can they know? Do they know? Well, they learn that over time by a variety of experiences. Is it by your words without your deeds? No. Is it by your deeds without your words? That can come across empty or leave questions. But it's that combination of words and deeds over time. That's how they know that you love them. But then how do they know that you love them more than other children? They know you love them. How do they know you love them more? And then how do they know that you love them less than you love God? Think about it from another angle. How do your children know that you love your husband or your wife? Again, you can think of the specifics, but it's a combination of, over time, the series of words and deeds that leads them to a conclusion on that. But it's not just, do they know that you love your spouse? Do they know that you love your spouse more than any other man or any other woman? How do they know? Just because you live under the same roof? That's a good starting place, but certainly goes beyond that, right? How do they know? Well, then, how do they know that you love God more than you love your spouse? And maybe when they're 5, 6, 7, that doesn't even cross their mind to compare it and think about it in that way. By the time they get to 18 or a few years after, that might cross their mind. How do I know that my father, my mother, loves God more than they love my mother or my father? How do they know that you love yourself? Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. You have value because you're made in the image of God. And I don't have any doubt that at least a part of the reason our society struggles with self-esteem and depression and anxiety, part of it because as a nation, we don't even know who we are, much less the value of other people. I've had that discussion recently in this humanist club that I visited. What makes you more valuable than a cow or a rock? And I've had people say, well, I'm not any more valuable. And without being made in God's image, that would be a true statement. So, yes, loving ourselves in the proper priority is important. How do our children know? We love ourselves consistent with what Jesus said about that. And then how do they know that I love myself less than I love God? What are the words? What are the deeds that would lead them to that conclusion? And so then to the broader point, you've got about 18 years to show them that you love God. But then how do they know that you love God more than anyone else? All of the above included, anything else you can come up with included. How do they know? How do they know that you love God the most? Now, I might pause here and acknowledge that doesn't mean that they'll grow up and love God the most. Just because they know that you do doesn't mean that they will. And God and Jesus, as the perfect instructors and trainers, demonstrate that. But is that not the one thing you want them to, at whatever point they leave your authority, they leave your home, is that not what you want them to walk away with, among some other things? Is whatever decision they make, they know what decisions you have made. And I'm reminding you, you've got 6,570 days and all of the series of decisions in that time frame to make this kind of impression. Doesn't mean it doesn't continue, but when you make that impression at that phase of their life, it's not better or worse, it's just different than whatever impression you're going to make later in their life. So, how do they know? Well, you've got 18 years to show them through your priorities that you love God the most. Jesus said in Matthew 6, verse 24, you cannot serve two masters. You can claim it, but when decisions have to be made, when conflicts come up, there are going to be times where you can only choose one or the other. And over time, children are going to grow up and they'll observe that they were there when there was a conflict between a want and a need, between what we enjoy doing and what God has said we must do, between the things God has said we may do and the things that we must do or that we must not do. And so that they have a unique vantage point that they were there with us when all those decisions were made. They know where we went and where we didn't go and why we went, often why we went and why we didn't go. They see something was uncompromisable. What was it? What is it? That's a part of the puzzle that leads them to a conclusion about whether or not you love God more than anyone and anything. Jesus said in Luke chapter 6, verse 45, the end of the verse, for out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. So your children know something about whether you do or not love God the most based on your words, not your words alone, but in part based on your words. Now, sometimes our words can be a cover. It can be a camouflage for what is really in the heart. But over time, over the course of 1,800 years, in the privacy of your home, you're not going to be able to maintain some kind of a show by saying the right things. Your children hear the words, but there's a lot of other pieces to that puzzle, as we're going to see. And so over the course of 18 years, your words are going to contribute to whether or not your children know that you love God the most. Did you not know I must be about my Father's business? It was Jesus' answer, of course, at the age of 12, when his parents finally found him at the temple. He wanted them to know, I must be about my Father's business. And they knew, and not strictly because of what happened on that occasion. And likewise, your children going to know over the course of time what your business is, who your father is, and whether On the first day of the week, you're about your Father's business. But on the third day of the week, if you're about the Father's business. And on the fifth day of the week, are you about the Father's business? They see us come and go. They see the things that have to happen. And they see the things that, well, we might get to that if everything else falls into place. And if it happens or is it if it doesn't, then it's okay. They see the difference in how we use our time. And that sends a signal about the depth and the direction of our love. Turn to Psalm 119. We're going to look at several verses in this psalm. Psalm 119, verses 136, or excuse me, verse 47. Psalm 119, verse 47. And I will delight myself in your commandments, which I love. And verse 97. Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day. Your children know the things that you delight in. They know the things that are the most meaningful to you and what you react the strongest to in a positive way, in a joyful way, in a cheerful way. They know what cheers mom up. They know what cheers dad up. And of course, this doesn't mean we can only be happy. We can only delight in one thing. But that's not the point of the lesson, is it? It's what do my parents, what do they delight in the most? Again, at the age 3, at age 5, at age 7, they might give different answers. They might not understand the question. But over the course of 6,570 days, I think they could give a pretty accurate representation, most children, of what their parents delight in and delight in the most. Now, verse 136, the other end of that. They not only know what we delight in, rivers of water run down from my eyes because men do not keep your law. They also know what are the things that make my father and mother's heart the heaviest. What are the hardest things for them to see? What makes them the saddest? And while he describes, you know, literal tears, we all cry different times, different reasons, but that isn't the precise point. But the law of God meant so much to him that he was disappointed, he was hurt. And when we think of the life of David, no doubt there tears fell from his eyes. He had children who did not keep the law of the Lord. And so whether it's that or any area, whatever we are most disappointed in, most hurt by, our children are gaining an understanding of that. What about anger? Your children ever see you angry, frustrated? Doesn't have to be. We can be angry and not sin. One couple of examples of that are in these Psalms. Verse 53. The psalmist says, indignation has taken hold of me because of the wicked who forsake your law. Sometimes we say righteous indignation. In verse 158, he says, I see the treacherous and am disgusted because they do not keep your word. So over the course of 18 years, your children may see you angry. What do they see you most angry about? What frustrates you the most to the point you control it, but you don't try to completely hide it? That's building your children's idea of who has the deepest place in your heart and mind and soul and strength. What about your contentment? Now, of course, by that I don't mean apathy, but contentment. Again, the psalmist says, great peace have those who love your law, and nothing causes them to stumble. Nothing causes them to leave the Lord. So what are the things over the course of 18 years that your children will see? But my parents were content. Things were to the left and to the right, or as Paul said, abound and in need. And what didn't change in you when everything around you changed. 18 years gives a lot of time for a lot of change, doesn't it? And it gives your children a lot of time to observe what your conduct in change, and did this change? Psalm 119, verses 33 and 34. Along with what we read a moment ago, teach me, O Lord, the way of your statutes, and I shall keep it to the end. Give me understanding, and I shall keep your law. Indeed, I shall observe it with my whole heart. What are the things that your children see that you're interested in learning, and you're always learning, and not just learning something new? What are the things that your children see? You go to it again and again, and no matter how many times you watch it, hear it, read it, eat it, do it, you're not discouraged from going back to that same trough again and again. Whatever those things are, your children know. You go back and back and back and back because there's something in that that is in you that keeps you going back again and again. What are your children going to conclude over the course of 18 years? And again, in that time frame, they might say, oh, it's this. They might say it's that. But by the year, their 18th year, by their 6,570th day, they've got a pretty good database of information to look back and to pull it all together and say, I remember they were always learning. And then we read Psalm 34, verse 11. Turn to Proverbs chapter 6, though. But in this psalm, he says, come, my children, I will teach you. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. And so, certainly the Holy Spirit was involved in Psalms and Proverbs, but don't let it escape the fact. David wrote, I believe, Psalm 34. And so now his son Solomon says in Proverbs 6, 20 through 22, my son, David's grandson, keep your father's command and do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. And when you awake, they will speak with you. Your children are going to see not only the things that you learn, but the things that you talk about, the things that you know that you want others to know. And your words are going to outlast you under the normal circumstances of life. There's going to be a day and a time where your children are on this earth and you are not. And what do you want to leave them? Will there be anything more than what Solomon says? You want something that stays around their neck, something that stays in their heart, something that will lead them and guide them and speak with them when you can't speak with them. Something is going to do that. You're tying and binding some things around the neck and in the heart of your children. But what is it? And at the end of this phase of our children's lives, whether it's you telling your children no for the sake of serving God, that shows what you wanted them to learn. And if you choose to allow them to make sinful decisions while they're under your authority, Joshua said, for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You're not leading them, but you're teaching them. And so it's the combination of these things, and you could add to that list. This is what leads your children to some conclusion, whether they consciously answer the question or whether it's just subtly there. You have 6,570 days to convince your children that whatever their decision is, your decision is to love God the most. You also have 18 years. I didn't do the math for the months or the weeks, but 6,570 days, not just to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to let them observe it, but then to do God's work with them. Emphasis on with them. Why is it that dads don't usually just sit down on the couch with a manual with their children and say, okay, well, here's how you catch a ball. Let's read about how to catch a ball. Let's read how to change a tire, and then let me tell you about all the tires I've changed and what happened. All right, I've told you about it, now go do it. Doesn't mean that couch talk can't be helpful, but why? The things that mothers want their daughters, their children to know, is it just by, well, here, I'm going to tell you, and then once I've told you, you're ready to go do it. What does training involve? Is it telling? Is it showing? Is it doing those things together? And the answer is, of course, it's all of the above. Yes, sit down and tell them about it and what they can expect. And then show them, maybe you do it and let them watch, but then you do it with them. Learning is enhanced when children hear it, see it, and do it. And there's lots of people they can do it with, but it makes a difference, doesn't it, if they did it with you. And there's other people they may can do different things with, but what are our children going to learn in America, 2000 and whatever, we're in 20, but as time goes on, what is our culture going to tell them and show them and do with them the things that they most need to learn at this phase of their life? And we all know the answer to that question, whether it's their formal education, whether it's our national leaders, whether it's our community leaders, they are not going to tell and show and do with our children the things that they need to learn and do the most. Is that why God gave the local church? God gave the local church to tell and show and do with your children work. Should the local church be in charge of overseeing your children getting their first job because it's so important that they learn to work? Well, no. The church has a part in that. We need to teach about work in our classes and publicly, and we sing a song. I will work. I will pray. That's sending an important message. But the church's primary responsibility is not to be the primary teacher and trainer of your children in the areas of work and proper dress and wisdom and dating and recreation and money. The church can help, but the church can tell, but the local church is not given to oversee the recreation and the training in all of these ways. Parents are. They need to do those things with you. And so here are your choices. I could come up with about four, and maybe there's some different nuances to it. But as a parent, we can say nothing and do nothing. And that seems to be the kind of home Timothy grew up in, at least with his father. His father was a Greek, that's all we're told. So we can say nothing and do nothing. We can say something, we can say the right things, but not do them, and then hope our children do. Now, that was the approach of the Pharisees, remember? Jesus said, they bind heavy burdens, but they won't lift a finger. Are there ever parents like that? That's a choice. We can also say the right things and do the right things alone. And then hope, well, by them hearing me say the right things and by them seeing me do the right things, I hope then they'll grow up and they'll do it too. And that's a lot better than the previous ones. But what's missing? What's missing is I can say the right things and do the right things with them. And I've got 18 years to do that. So think with me, three different areas to make some application. You know your life, your children, all those dynamics better than I do. But make applications in those areas. Think about God's work among the local church. That's a lesson in and of itself, but just to feed our thinking. Greet one another, Romans chapter 16 and verse 16. He's not talking about just a obligatory hello. Just be sure you give everybody a holy kiss or hand wave or whatever it may be. The point there implies something more than just a greeting, doesn't it? You care about these people enough, you're interested in them, and you express that. And there's a variety of ways that we express that. 1 Corinthians 11:18, when you come together, when you come together as a church. When you do that, chapter 14, verse 26, let all things be done for edification. This is our work for the Lord. We can be like Barnabas in Acts chapter 4. He wasn't just there in the assembly, but when he saw the needs among those people, then he even, when it was a physical need, he was one of those who even sold his possessions to meet that need. When it was a spiritual need, he was willing to travel. He was willing to go to them and do his best to help meet that spiritual need. But sometimes we know the need, we're not even sure we know how to help. Well, we're still not without obligation then. Chloe's household in 1 Corinthians 1, Chloe's household had written to Paul and said, here's some of the problems. We need advice. We need help. We need teaching. Was that gossip? Because Chloe was talking about some of these things behind their back. It wasn't gossip. Chloe's household was seeking help, wisdom, truth. Chloe's household was involved in the lives of the Church of Jesus Christ in Corinth and concerned when there was a need and was active when there was a need. So think of these kinds of things. And as a parent, in the first 18 years of your lives, in regards to these things, you can say nothing and do nothing about greeting and assembling and being involved publicly and privately from house to house. You can say nothing, you can do nothing. You can say some really good things that your children need to hear, and maybe other children don't hear anything. And it's better if they hear it than if they don't hear it. But then you do nothing. Do you expect them to do it? You can say the right things and do the right things. And that's important. But if you don't do it with them, what is your expectation, at least from your responsibility? Or say the right things and do the right things and do them with them. Do you see the difference? Whether it be your participation in Bible classes or the assembly, you can say nothing, do nothing. You can say something, do nothing, and expect them to. You can prepare your lesson, or you can prepare their lesson with them. Doesn't mean every time, all the time. But do you see some difference if every once in a while, mom one time, dad a different time, sits down and does your child's lesson, helps them to prepare for class? Do you think you can add something that maybe the teacher wouldn't have time or thought to add? You know your child better than they do. Of course you can. But what message does that send to your children? That you're active, you're participating, whether it's their Bible classes, in looking at the needs among the local church. Who needs encouragement? Who just needs someone? And whether your child is 5 years old and all they can do is kind of scratch out their name and a little picture, what could that do? And on the other side, you write a little note. You sat down with your son, with your daughter, spent 10 minutes to write a few words, draw a picture, and mail that to someone who needs some encouragement. What does that do for them who receives it? But what does that do over the course of 18 years with your children? That's a part of God's work. What about being a neighbor? As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially to those who are of the household of faith. Visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. These and other passages, when as Jesus taught, you know, who was neighbor to him? So that's something every Christian has to do. But every Christian who has children can say nothing and do nothing, can do say something, do nothing, and hope that their children do, can say it and do it alone, or can say it and do it with their children. Again, you see the difference. And this is true in things as simple as when we're in public with our children, noticing other people. Do you see how less and less people notice other people? A lot of times because there's this thing in the way. And so they don't notice there's somebody else to open the door for at the grocery store, something as simple as to notice, oh, this older woman dropped her can of tomato sauce, and so notice that and pick that up. It can be in that, or when we have a gospel meeting, or these cards that we have at the back to hand out. Here's something: when we are in public, if we will notice other people, we can do something. We can't have a whole Bible conversation with them necessarily, but we can do something. But if we do something with our children, if we involve them, some people may accept one of those little cards from your children, and they may not do so to you. That's good for that person. What is that teaching your children when they are with you and you notice other people, both their physical needs and their spiritual needs? What about in your home, organizing, hosting, any expression of hospitality? It may be a meal. It may be hosting a Bible study. It may be a singing. It's good to do that. And you do all the work. You get everybody there. Your children will get some benefit out of that. But what about opening your home and your children help to prepare some of the snacks or the food? Your children help to plan the day and who's going to come. Your children invite one of the kids on the soccer team. Hey, we're going to sing a few songs. Or they go with you, go to invite your neighbor across the street or someone they know that you know. If you do it at all, that's good. But you see, the benefits and the blessings are magnified when you not only do it, you do it with your children over the course of 18 years or whenever you start. There's a difference. Your children leave the home having heard it and seen it and done it, and done it with you. And then last, the work that we have to do as a church, the work that we do individually, and the work that you do in your home is just as important to God as all of these. Bring your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That's what he said. You can do nothing. You can say something and do nothing. You can say something and do something. You can say something and do something with them. Prayers in the home versus prayers in the home with your children. Songs in the home versus songs in the home with your children. Reading the Bible in your home. Reading the Bible in your home with your children. There's a difference that will outlast your life on this earth. Do you care who they marry? Of course you care who they marry. Tell your children the value of your spouse. Explain to your children what you do for your spouse and why. Not to show them how great a spouse you are, but our society is pretty good at distracting the minds of our children, holding their attention. Here, watch this, and then wear this, and talk to your friends about it, and then go to the show at the center about it. Our society is good at getting the attention and the mind and keeping the attention and mind of our children. It doesn't mean all those things are wrong. It just means somebody has to help to direct our children's attention and hold our children's attention on the things that are most important. And again, we get very little help from our society, if any. What are you doing in your home? What are you saying in your home? What are you doing with them in your home that helps them to see the value of your spouse, of their father, of their mother, of their brethren, on and on, whoever those people are that are involved in your lives? Someone has to do it. Someone has to say it. Someone has to do it. Someone has to do it with them. And if you don't, someone else will. And you have 6,570 days to do it. When I was 10, I said, that's forever. I'm 43. That big a number doesn't look so daunting anymore, and especially now that I have three children. Whatever it is that your child needs is what God expects you to do. And God is the one who created the limitations and the boundaries of time and of our lives. And whatever God expects you to do, you can do in 6,570 days. After that point, your work is not over. But after that point, there is a phase of their observation and their development that changes. And with God's help, your child will be able to answer the question, outwardly or inwardly, who do my parents love the most? And did I do God's work with them? If you'll give them that opportunity, they'll be ready for the next 6,570 days and the following 6,570 days, and they'll be ready for eternity. And that's what this phase is about. That's why God gave parents and children. We're on the clock. Let's be ready. Turn your songbooks to number 237. Think about your light. It's burning. And to which direction is it? Which direction is it leading your children and others around you? But as we sing, we encourage you to think about your own light. Is your light from the light? Jesus came into this world, the light of the world. And if you are here this morning and know that you are in sin, do you know the Jesus that came to this earth and lived and died and arose again? If you know of your need for forgiveness and the blessings and hope, He offers that because of His death and His resurrection. If you would confess your faith with the determination to leave sin, you can be baptized into Christ, new and clean and ready to start today. Or if you need to return to Him, if you need our strength, or if you're abiding in Christ, this song will urge us to do that. But if we can help you in any way, tell us how. Come as we stand and sing.